Well, good morning. Welcome back. It's the Faith Radio Network with Bill Meyer. Gender-neutral baby names are all the rage this year. In fact, the Today Show recently reported the number of babies given unisex names like Harper and Charlie and Emerson has risen 60% over the past 10 years. Banana Republic has even done away with pink and blue distinctions in one of their children's lines. And, of course, we don't even want to mention the restrooms at Target. Wait a minute, I did just mention that. Well, joining us to make sense of this gender confusion is Glenn Stanton. He's a social researcher with Focus on the Family and the author of Secure Daughters, Confident Sons. Good morning, Glenn.
Good morning, Bill. It's good to be with you.
So who would have ever thunk that we would reach a day when we would have to talk to our kids about why the lady in the flower print dress in the Target restroom has a 5 o'clock shadow and a really, really deep voice? I mean,
is a dude. Well, you know what? If you remember, Aerosmith had a song about this. Dude looks like a lady. So history repeats itself. But back then it was a joke.
I heard that on the radio the other day and my kids were asking me about it. So, well, what has happened? What has happened to our culture in the past few years, Glenn? It seems like we are moving at light speed into a very dark place.
Well, it's interesting, Bill. I mean, first to think about that, we have been here before. I mean, it was, you know, the parents of the 60s and the early 70s who, you know what, we're going to give our kids gender-neutral toys and gender-neutral names, and we're going to paint their room when we bring them home from the hospital yellow and green. And, you know, these kids will just grow up, you know, outside of the gender stereotypical boxes that society builds for them. And what these kids found out, or what these parents found out, was, oh my goodness, why is Johnny taking that mop and using it as a rifle? And, you know, why is little Cindy putting her dump truck to bed for its nap? You know, and so basically we're just kind of on 2.0 of this, with the false understanding that, well, male and female are cultural constructs. And if we treat our kids, you know, kind of like general neutral individuals, they will become that. And it's false. It was false the first time, it's false again, and it's just a silliness. Anybody who has kids knows that they come out of the womb gendered, not just in terms of their body, but like, you know what? My little boy's a little boy. My little girl's a little girl. And that's one of the big things that I talk about in my book, Secure Daughters, Confident Sons. Now, there's 100 different ways to be a good boy and a good girl. You know, no two are the same. But there is a general male way of being and a general female way of being.
Now, the book is written to parents, providing them with solid advice that's rooted in decades of scientific research and also a very distinctly Christian worldview. I know Focus on the Family receives thousands of calls from parents every year. What kind of questions are they asking about kids and gender?
Well, one of the big, big questions is kids who are, you know, what the clinicians call gender dysphoric. They are not sure, like, you know, okay, I'm 3-4 years old and, you know, your little boy is kind of identifying as a girl. And the answer there is, you know what, that's completely normal. It's not normal in the sense of lots and lots and lots of kids do that, but many do. And what that means is, you know what, they'll straighten out once they come to realize, okay, I'm a little boy. I do boy things. But what we need to understand is there is no science whatsoever that says it's a good idea to facilitate those kinds of changes, especially before puberty, because anywhere from only 10% to 2% of the kids who identify with the other gender continue to do so after puberty. You know, nearly all of them snap out of it. And so the clinicians say, if you as a parent facilitate those kinds of changes, oh, you think you're a girl? Well, let's change everything to, you know, fulfill your girl kind of fantasy there. Those kids have a hard time changing back when they do realize, hey, I'm not a girl, I'm a little boy.
The problem is, though, that that's what our culture is telling moms and dads. And as you said, even some clinicians believe they've bought this whole you know, gender dysphoria myth, and they're saying, I'm going to help you steer your child in the direction that they think they should go. And then, of course, we're talking about everything from hormonal treatments to later surgery. I mean, it's, Glenn, it's, I've heard one Christian medical group call it child abuse, and I have to agree with that.
Well, and it is child abuse. And primarily, I mean, this is the ironic thing, because the picture is kind of drawn that you have, you know, kind of backwoods, flat earth, religious reactionaries who are saying, oh, no, no, don't facilitate this kind of thing in your child. And they're, you know, these clinicians are just following the trends of, you know, what they think is hip and groovy and, you know, the quote-unquote with it people are doing. There's a big major center that deals with this issue in Canada, and there's another major center, one of the largest in the world, in the Netherlands, very progressive and very accepting of transgender people, but they do absolutely do not recommend that parents facilitate and play along with the child in this change. I mean, they see it as child abuse too, in the sense of, yes, it's very likely that your child is going to, you know, kind of straighten out their understanding all by themselves and realize that, you know what, I am a little boy. And when you have changed their room, their clothes, their identity at school, their, you know, even sometimes birth certificate, name, and you know, gender identity, when they get to be 9, 10 years old and they want to change all that back, that can be very traumatic for the child as well.
Mm. Let's get into the science of gender differences for a moment. What is it telling us about the innate differences between boys and girls? Not the, you know, quote unquote socially constructed, but actual inborn differences.
Oh, my goodness. I mean, that's the remarkable thing, is this is all happening at the very time that the social sciences and the neurological sciences and the psychological sciences are telling us that there are universal, humanly universal differences between men and women. And it's not just body parts, and it's not just the things that men and women like to do, but deep down into their brains. I mean, you know, of course, there are male and female genitalia, but they're telling us now that there is a male and female brain. There are, you know, male and female DNA, if you will. And so our maleness and our femaleness go deep into who we are. And it's interesting that psychological anthropologists, these very fancy people who go around the world and study gender difference, they find that there are real and broad commonalities between what females do and like and act like all over the world and what males do and like and act like all over the world. These are not social constructs. They will say, you know, you go to a small town in Iowa, study the men and women there, and then you go to the opposite side of the world to some, you know, town in you know, some part of Mongolia or China, and you will find similarities between men and women in terms of, like, mate selection. You know, that's not just a cultural construct. And then little boys and little girls, I mean, there are those differences that we observe, and those differences are true all over the world. It's interesting, you know, here living in Colorado Springs, up in Denver, there's this wonderful cultural museum, and they have lots of Native American artifacts. And one of the things that they have there, I think it's so cool, is an original kind of corn husk doll for little Native American girls. And these things are 100, 200 years old. Little girls like dolls. You know, and it's not just, you know, like you had referenced opening up, it's, you know, like Target has pink and blue aisles. And so girls are forced into thinking that, well, you know, girls should like dolls and things like that. No, girls have always liked dolls. They've always wanted dolls.
It's fascinating. We're talking to Glenn Stanton. He is a social researcher with Focus on the Family, and his book is called Secure Daughters, Confident Sons. We'll take a quick break and be right back here at Faith Radio. Good Good morning. It's the Faith Radio Network. It's Bill Meyer with my guest, Glenn Stanton from Focus on the Family. Glenn wrote an excellent book for moms and dads. It's called Secure Daughters, Confident Sons. And Glenn, some Christian parents might be a little bit surprised to find out you don't really take a strictly traditional view of gender in your book. Why is that?
Well, that really is important, Bill, because in a sense, nobody really takes a strict traditional view of gender. You know, we realize that there's lots of different ways to be a good man, a good boy, a good woman, a good daughter, a good girl. I mean, you know, we talk about this, well, you know, boys are blue and girls are pink. I mean, I bet you every listener of this show has girls that are, you know, maybe a little more, not quite tomboyish, but you know what? They don't really like dolls. They don't really like to, they like to sweat. They like sports. They like to work, you know, do hard sports and be challenged. Then, you know, you can have boys that, you know what? They like the arts. They like creativity. They don't like to go out and get dirty. They don't like to break things. That's a little bit more how my boy is. So it's really even just a false construct that we build of, okay, little boys should be this way and little girls should be this way. In fact, you know, Scripture doesn't even talk about that or like that. It has some directions in terms of what men and women do in terms of life within the church, but you're not going to find a whole lot of Scripture on, well, this is how boys are and this is how girls are. So I start out the book talking about, yes, there are 101 ways for good girls to be good girls and good women to be good women, gender-wise, sex-wise. And the same thing is true for men. But that does not mean that we can't speak meaningfully about what it means to be a man or a woman. I mean, an illustration that I used years ago when, you know, when she was a lot in the news was Sarah Palin, okay? Very feminine woman. Nobody, you know, it thinks about her as like, okay, she's mixing up the genders. But she loves to hunt. She can field dress an elk, you know? and nobody thinks, you know what, I wish that woman would just go home and be in the kitchen like, you know, a real woman would be. I mean, the staunch conservatives love her, you know, and they don't get wigged out about, you know, her not following the, you know, the stereotypical kind of things. I talk about as well, you know, your boy wants to go into ballet. Dads can kind of get freaked out about that. Introduce your son to this guy named Mikhail Baryshnikov. You know, he does a seemingly feminine thing in an incredibly masculine way. And so, you know, yeah, that's to answer your question. And that certainly there are not these, you know, tight, clean, clear blue and pink boxes. But that, again, that doesn't mean that we can't speak meaningfully and truthfully about what it means to be male and female.
And as we mentioned before the break, some significant differences that we're finding just biologically with brain differences, brains different structurally, lighting up in different ways under a stimulation, male and female brains different from the start. Now, talk about, if you would, Glenn, because you really address this in your book, the unique roles that moms and dads play in the gender development of their children.
Well, and that's good. I mean, I spend about the last half of the book talking about that because that is such a big topic. But, you know, what we find, and again, secular anthropologists talk about this, is that because men and women are different as male and female parents, that they give examples to the kids, to their children. And people have male and female kids, you know. Very seldom does. I mean, you know, they say there's 50 different genders. There, you know, nobody says, congratulations, you have an XYZ kid that's not a girl or a boy. It's always, you know, congratulations, it's a girl. Congratulations, it's a boy. But what we find out with parents and moms and dads is little girls realize after a while, okay, I'm more like mom. I follow her example. I'm like her. And dad, I love him and I love to be like him and I want to emulate him, but I'm a different sex than he is. And same thing with the boys. You know, he really early on identifies with mom. And this is where we get the phrase, cut the apron strings. You know, every little boy has to have the apron strings cut to be able to say, you know what, mom has been my caregiver, my life giver, my trusted, you know, person, but I need to start interacting with and identifying with dad because I'm a boy just like he's a boy. And those are very significant. And those distinctions, you know, happen in a zillion different ways with moms and dads with their little boys and girls. But that example is important.
You and I have talked before about the different ways that moms and dads discipline their kids, the way they comfort them, even the way they play with them. And each of those unique ways really complement each other. And that's why kids from intact homes with a loving mom and dad do so well over any other family form. Let me ask you this, Glenn, just in the minute or a half we have left. What can parents do on a daily basis to nurture their child's God-given design and resist some of these cultural pressures to conform to something that's completely contrary to what God intended?
Yeah, now see, that is such a very important question, Bill, and it really comes down to this. It's, you know, kind of a different take on that verse, raise up a child in the way that he or she should go. We sometimes think about that as well in the way they should behave. But God gave you a little individual, and you are not to raise that child in accordance with how you think some other child should be. Raise that child as the little individual that God made them to be. What are their interests? What's their personality? What's their temperament? And help them become, raise them up to be. I mean, that's what a farmer does. It plants certain seeds and it says, okay, this is a stalk of corn. I'm going to help this be the best stalk of corn that it possibly can be. That's what we need to do as parents, is read into and get tuned into, who is this unique little child that God has gave me, and how do I help, you know, Tammy, how do I help Michael become the Tammy and Michael that God created them to be? And really, you as parents are the only ones that can really do that kind of reading and do the job that's required there, because you're the one who has that biological or adoptive connection that is there every day observing them and interacting with them.
Mm. Glenn Stanton, our guest. The book is called Secure Daughters, Confident Sons. You can learn more about Glenn at focusonthefamily.com. Glenn, thanks so much for your time today and, as always, for your great insights.
Hey, you bet, Bill, and thanks for the invitation. It's good to talk to you.